Yes, you're now listening to Movie Metropolis, and I have some very special guests in the studio, filmmakers who have made a number of short films that will be screening on the 26th of July at the Thornbury Picture House. And we are about to talk to Misha Bakker and Siobhan Jackson. Other things I'll be doing later in the show, film reviews and so on, but we're going to spend a bit of time talking to Misha and Siobhan. Welcome to Movie Metropolis.
Hi. Thanks, Peter. Hey, hi, everyone.
Hello.
Okay. Now, hopefully everything's working. Bill, are you still there?
Yes, I am, Peter.
Ah, wonderful. I didn't lose you. Now, let's start from the start, I suppose. Bill, tell me about the Unknown Pleasure screening, how you and Chris organised this for the 26th of July.
Well, this is the latest screening in a series we've been doing for a few years now, and if it wasn't for COVID, we'd probably have close to 100 screenings under our belt by now, but alas, we've only had 25 or 30 under our belt in the past few years, since about 2018. And basically, Unknown Pleasures, as the title suggests, is a programming stream where we program films that, you know, are a little bit outside the normal kind of view of kind of things in terms of profile and whatever. Sometimes it's certainly some filmmakers who are well known. But yeah, basically we like to do retrospective screenings of past films. You know, films from independent filmmakers whose films are also a bit kind of unusual and, you know, have different forms and explore different subjects. And actually, like the films we're showing Tuesday week, especially Misha in his films, you know, the way he explores sexuality is quite daring at times. And so, yeah, basically this is the screening that we have coming up. So,
And it's great that you and Chris promote Australian cinema. It's so important that we see our own stories, and many of these films would not have been seen by most of the audience at all. So, again, this gives an opportunity to catch up with films that deserve to be seen.
Yeah, and especially some of the short films that have been made over the years, you know, unless it's a current short film, it can get kind of lost in time, and so it's good to dig them up and give them a presentation in the cinema, especially. Yeah, so we're very pleased. As you know, I met Siobhan there at your radio show a few years ago, and saw her feature film You Can Say Vagina, which she directed in conjunction with Misha Bakker. And I really loved that film and programmed it in a programming stream in 2019. And then after that, I saw some of their short films and I thought, yeah, these are pretty good filmmakers.
Great kudos to you both. So, yes, You Can Say Vagina was a really terrific film, very clever in terms of its writing and so on. I know we had a long chat about it some years ago when you were then programming it, so yeah, which is fantastic.
Yep.
Okay, now let's talk about these short films. Now, you've sent me a screener compilation of 95 minutes of short films by Misha and by Siobhan. Is that pretty much the exhaustive list of films that will be screened on the 26th of July?
On that screener, yes, that's the program that will be screened, 90 minutes worth of films. Both Siobhan and Misha have made some other films as well, so it's certainly not their entire oeuvre of short films. But it's some of the key works that they've made. And I think Misha especially makes all kinds of little documents and a lot of kind of music and dance films that maybe he doesn't consider kind of proper films. But I've seen a few of the other ones, apart from a couple of the ones programmed, where dance and music are involved, and they're all interesting. But I think we should let the filmmakers talk about their own work, perhaps, yeah.
Absolutely. That's the next part of the interview. So, first of all, Siobhan, can I ask you, you've produced 17 films, I read, and one of them, 1, 2, 3, was that shot in Germany?
No, it was actually shot... It was shot by a German cinematographer and who'd come to Australia, and to complete the course she was doing in Munich... she had to shoot a film, and in her mind, Australia was wonderfully exotic. So we actually just shot out past Epping. So far from Germany, but not far from Melbourne. So, yeah, we shot out, out beyond Epping. But, yeah.
Okay. Well, tell me, I'll ask you both this, but Siobhan, first of all, what's the inspiration behind you deciding on the stories, on the short films that you make? What's the process that you use?
Oh, gee, I wish I knew, Peter, because it would make it easier every time if I if I had a set theory. The 1, 2, 3, which is probably the oldest film in this particular collection that Bill's chosen, I made when I left film school, about a year or two after I left film school. And it was an attempt to, I think, go a little bit back to my roots. I did painting and sculpture before I started film and television, and it was a way of trying to get bodies into the landscape and get them moving around in the landscape, and then sort of working a story out once we're out in the landscape with those bodies in it. So it was sort of a way of trying to sculpt a story, I guess, in a way. And I wasn't that keen in some ways on writing, and it took me a long time to get my head around thinking about writing dialogue. So I made silent films, and that was the first one in that series. And at film school, I'd always... Every time I'd go from the idea to the script, then to the shooting, then to the editing, they'd get worse and worse at every step. That was my experience, and it was probably just a lack of experience at the time. That film was me trying to find a way of bringing the two things that I knew together, filmmaking and also painting and sculpture, that kind of silent art in a totally different way. So I don't know how I come up with the ideas. It's something much more intuitive and physical, I think, than having an idea and then putting it into film form. I kind of feel my way through them a little bit. I certainly did then, anyway.
Okay. I might just get you to put your microphone a little bit closer.
Certainly. How's that?
A little bit more, because it's not coming through as loudly. And in terms of the film styles that you use, because you certainly are very eclectic in terms of the approach you use to... the different film styles, how do you make those decisions?
I think the film makes the decision for me, I suspect. I have no particular... I'm not wedded to any one particular way of making. I kind of just... I go in a bit blind, to be honest. It would be lovely if I had a clear and sensible idea when I started, but I often don't. But perhaps that's how they get made. It's me trying to discover what I'm doing as I'm making, as much as having decided before I start.
Right. So you don't pre-script or storyboard or anything like that?
Oh, no, I have thoughts, I have ideas, yeah. I have... sometimes I have a script. I mean, one of the films... one of the other silent films is probably about 14 minutes long, and the script was probably 3.5 pages of sort of light notes, in script format, but, you know, light notes. So they sort of evolve more than, they're less colouring in a script, as the script is kind of kicking me onto location and getting me to start working and thinking with actors. But beyond that, they sort of emerge more from notes than from a formal script space. Certainly, in the cases of those films, anyway.
Okay, fine. No, that formative sort of process is very effective. Misha, to you, how do you make decisions about what you film and how you film it?
Well, I usually just have thoughts and feelings that have come up in my life, and I want some way to put them out there into the world and when I'm making a film, I think it's a way to kind of try and make those thoughts and feelings a bit more explicit or dramatic. Kind of entertaining, I guess.
Okay.
Hopefully. Yeah.
You don't seem to be, but are you wedded to particular approaches or genres or styles of filmmaking?
Well, I really like filmmakers like Mike Lee and Michael Haneke. So I guess it's a kind of a bit of a naturalistic kind of vibe, but also a bit heightened, maybe in the kind of particularly with the dialogue, maybe just kind of giving it a bit more, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, many of these films have a sort of an added dimension which takes them away from the straight reality sort of filmmaking, and that can be very effective.
Yeah.
How interesting. Out of the film screening on the 26th, which would you say is your favourite?
It's
surely one of mine, Misha.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, no, I'd have to go with one of mine because, for a filmmaker, a film really is kind of indulging some ideas and experiences. And so, I was thinking, I don't know which one's my favourite, but I was thinking about the film that I made called I Still Like to Photograph Girls Naked, because that's starring my friend Paul Allais in it. And today we were shooting some yoga films. And yoga videos, I should say. So they're instructional yoga videos, and we're like business partners in making instructional yoga videos. And I just had this funny thought of like, oh, this is, not many people would know that on other occasions we've decided to go and make some art together and make some strange things together. And it always amuses me that we also make these very kind of conventional yoga videos. And at times we've... I remember making that film and asking Paula if she'd get naked for my movie and do some strange things.
Okay. When I saw the title,
I don't know what sort of audience we're encouraging to come along now. But
exactly.
Well, maybe go and watch some yoga videos first and then...
Okay. It's all very consensual, folks. It's all fine. There's nothing to see here.
Yes. Paul's aware of the screening, and she's all for it. She won't be attending because she thought it'd be a bit awkward.
that is interesting. All right. And Siobhan, about with your films that are screening on the night, what would you say is your favourite?
That's a toughie. There are bits and pieces of all of them that I'm very fond of, and there are bits and pieces of all of them that I'm thinking, what was I thinking when I was doing that? But I guess actually 1, 2, 3, the one that you mentioned first, it sort of changed how I thought about making, and so I'm very fond of it for that reason. An old friend who did the music for it, I sort of fell very heavily in love with what he did. So in that regard, I kind of like to see that film. It's the one film I do actually quite like to go back and look at because I hear his music and I think it's really terrific. Yeah. So, I have a sentimental love of that one for all sorts of reasons, and partly having this lovely German cinematographer, Sanna Kurz, come out with a really ancient old 35mm camera with old Second World War lenses, and it was just a really lovely experience driving out to those odd little locations on people's farms and shooting these two people walking through the landscape. I just have very fond memories of it. And actually, one of the things that was really lovely, it was during, I can't remember when we made it, it must be 15 years ago, maybe longer, it was during a really, really bad bushfire season. And we were a long way from where the bushfires were, but it made the landscape unbelievably beautiful. And these incredible colours in the sky. And so there was just something incredibly physical and really very present about making it. So, for those reasons, I'm very fond of it for that reason.
Okay. Fair enough. So, in fact, I've noticed that you use music considerably in many of your films, and that's used to heighten effect, obviously.
Well, when they're silent, it's hard to go without some sort of
Yes.
So for that reason, though, those particular films do have a lot of music. Others have very little when there's lots of talky talk, but
And Michelle, what's your preference, using music or using dialogue or
Well, I think a lot of the music I use is just happening in the scene. The characters are listening to it. I don't use much music beyond that. I guess its purpose is still the same in a way, to help develop the mood and the character and the tone. And yeah.
Okay. Again, I'll just get you to speak up a little bit yeah. closer to the microphone. All right. So how much support do you both have in terms of making these films? I suspect the answer is probably zero. But tell me about any support you do have.
Well, funnily enough, Siobhan supported me in making some of these films, and helping in the early stages when kind of developing the ideas, and right through to kind of finishing it off in the editing room. Probably one of the most important kind of supports I've had in being a filmmaker. Yeah.
Oh, vice versa, actually. Actually, Misha was in the first year that I taught at VCA. I teach at VCA, and he was in the first year I taught there a long time ago now, which must be 15 or 16 years ago. And when Misha had finished at the school, we started making work together, which was really fantastic. And so I think we've been a support to one another in that regard. So in a sort of social sense, Misha is always somewhere in the periphery or right in the centre of what I'm doing as well, which is always really lovely. And there's something about the relationship we have where we seem to be, I don't know, for better or for worse, but there's nothing I won't tell Misha. So, sorry, Misha. I'm hoping vice versa.
Yeah.
Strangely, it's, you know, that sometimes you find those people and they're terrific collaborators. So even when we're not making together, we're constantly texting or giggling about a possibility of what's going to be something that's down the track or that we've just done and we're kind of horrified or delighted by.
We're often trying to entertain each other first with the idea that then that would go on to hopefully entertain a bigger audience. But the first person to kind of impress or make laugh or is, you know, either one in conversation. Mm. And sometimes that fails, and that's really insightful as well, because we're like, oh, I better try a bit harder.
That's right. And sometimes the ideas really are diabolically bad. And Misha's not afraid to tell me in one way or another, just by sending me a kind of rubbishy looking emoji, goes, yeah, rethink that one.
And that's pretty precious too, because it's hard to have those kind of friendships where you can just kind of put anything on the table and get a genuine response.
I tell Misha things from my creative brain that I don't even tell my own partner, because I'm kind of horrified it might be something to be ashamed of. But somehow that's not the case with our conversation.
And if you're terribly ashamed, usually it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, that's right.
In my book, anyway.
Yeah, in our film world.
Yeah, in our film world. Yep.
I like the process. It's a really excellent idea to be able to bounce ideas off each other and to really work together. Bill, I assume you're still there. What do you think of this collaborative process that Misha and Siobhan have been undertaking?
Oh, it's fantastic, because obviously the feature film that they've made together has a distinct quality to it, and it's not the same quality as they have as individual filmmakers, and yet they're able to get a lot out of each other when working together as co-directors. And I must sort of prod them here. You know, there is a second feature that they've shot a few years ago. What's happening with that one, guys? Is it
Well, you'll be glad to know, Bill. Well, he's one of the loveliest people on the planet, let's just put that out there, but he's also a real encourager, which we really appreciate. And we did shoot this film that's called Saltbush, and with a whole bunch of teenagers out at a scout camp out, I can't actually remember where it was now, but out in, you know, rural Victoria. And we were a bit slow to start editing it, and then COVID hit and various things happened, and it's just been sitting there on hard drives for about 3 years now.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm glad to say, Bill, that about 2 months ago, Misha and I did actually sit down together and start editing it. And actually, I think the gap between shooting it and of course, all the teenagers are now adults, you know, voting and driving, and, you know, we haven't seen them since then. But going back to it was really fun and kind of strange, and we were slightly horrified by some of the things that we...
It was a bit shocking,
confronting,
but
strange
in a good way.
Yeah,
but I think also it was an email that Bill had sent.
It was Bill.
Saying, you know, where's that film? What's going on? That prompted us to, hey, we should have another look at that. So we're very grateful.
Yeah. So we're about halfway through, Bill, and hopefully by the end of this year it'll be ready to go.
Yeah.
Wow. You'll be our first audience.
That's right.
Yeah, great, great.
Another unknown pleasure screening to be scheduled. I like it. So, Bill, all of these short films, I gather they haven't been screened publicly, really, at least not in any major audiences or anything like that. So you can probably say these are premiere screenings, can't you?
I'm sure that the guys would know how many screenings they've had, but there's some, like, you know, Misha's graduation film, Last Beautiful Friend, that's the biggest film of his, showing 25 minutes long, I think. That had a few screenings and won some awards, Misha, I think VCA awards.
Went to some festivals and things. Yeah, I think the film that I was mentioning before with Paula in it, that isn't available, and it'll be very that'll probably be its first screening, partly because we don't want our yoga audience to get a bit perplexed by so if you want an exclusive experience, then this is the only way to have it, you know.
Go along to the Thornbury Picture House.
I think Paul is very lucky, because the first film in the series is not as discreet as this one.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, this is actually the tamer version. Yeah,
like this that Misha has made. Yeah,
yeah, it's part of a series. Yeah.
Interesting. And Siobhan, your film "Donkey in a Lion's Cage" is really quite fascinating.
Thanks, Peter.
Short tragedy, as you label it. How interesting.
Yeah. What is there to say about that film? I was always fascinated about the idea of someone throwing themselves. Well, I shouldn't say, actually, because it will give away what happens in the film. I was fascinated by a thing that, if you come along to the screening, you'll see, which, actually, to go back to your question from before, what starts something, I had one physical kind of image idea, and I built a story around that one physical image idea, and that was the film that came. And I think at the time I was really into sort of slight realism crashed together very violently with fairy tales and kind of unpleasant ones. And so that's the film that came from that. I'm not sure if I really nailed it. I think that film's got all sorts of problems. But there are things in it I really love, and people I worked with on that I really love, and some performances in there I think are really beautiful. But it's a strange beast, that one. I think
it was a bit fairy tale, like, making that film, because I remember the location was.
Yeah, Misha was there. It was a silent film, and I asked Misha to record sound, which was, I could only Misha could I ask that of, and there was something surreal and strange about that. And of course, he did a beautiful job, and I did actually use one of the bits of sound that he did record in the end, because it was so lovely. And so there is one moment where sound does come into the film, and.
But I think I loved having a job where I was kind of almost useless. It's kind of felt quite liberating.
I think, you know, actually, we kind of like to play with one another in this particular way. That was my. It was like on You Can Say Vagina. My partner's a cinematographer, and we got him to record sound because he was a cinematographer. It was something in us that is unable to quite do it the straight way.
He is responsible for some lovely things. Cinematography.
Yes,
how do you say that word?
Light and camera wise.
Yes, that's right.
And he keeps us professional when we sort of lose our way a bit, which happens quite a bit with Misha and I. Yeah. Let's face it, that's the truth. But he keeps us on the straight and narrow. So,
very good. All very interesting. I must say, in the credits, when I looked up IMDb, which of course is not always reliable, nevertheless, for you, Misha, I saw a film called Avatar.
That's a short film I made a long time ago, even before the other big budget Avatar.
He's actually James Cameron. He's being very humble.
So I did actually use that title before James Cameron, and then he must have seen my film.
been inspired.
And been inspired by the a similar concept, really, you know, in that you have someone else kind of representing you, but in my case it was a very low budget kind of puppet creation. It wasn't a big CGI creation. I decided not to kind of pursue any copyright.
Yes.
James Cameron had to spend millions and millions and millions to get what you got for maybe $50.
That's right, yeah, yeah. And,
you know. Big budget.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yep.
No, absolutely understand. Bill, obviously you're hoping for a full house because you've been getting full houses at the Thornbury Picture House for Unknown Pleasures, haven't you?
Oh, I think we've lost him. Yeah. Must have said the wrong thing.
Yes. We love you, Bill.
Come back.
Hang up and see if he rings back.
I think he programs. He and Chris program really well.
Yes.
And lots of films that it's really hard to see in other places. So
exactly.
If you know it's there, it's a very tempting place to go to Bill and Chris's screenings, because they've just got really interesting work that, like I say, it's just impossible to see elsewhere. I mean, you can't even kind of hunt it down on the internet, which
that's
is
true.
You know, and most stuff you can find, but you know, so.
And Bill's back with us.
Sorry, my phone, the battery went.
Oh, that's all right. I thought the studio cut you off or something. But we were just commenting on how well you program Unknown Pleasures and making sure that you screen as many films that the audience may not have encountered before, so which is a great process.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we have fun doing that, and a lot of audience are really surprised and delighted by what they see. And they're enlightened and they get a bit of history about a certain, you know, independent filmmaking of the 70s, 80s, 90s, zeros. So it's great fun, and not many people are doing this kind of thing. Although I'm pleased to see MIFF have a great selection of kind of 70s, 80s independent cinema this year. So some of the same titles that I've done pleasures of screened in the past few years, but that's okay.
You're ahead of the curve, Bill.
Yes, definitely. So we just remind people it's at the Thornbury Picture House on Tuesday, 26th of July at 8:30 p.m. What programs have you got coming up?
There's a few things. There's a focus on Ivan Gahl. Ivan Gahl is a filmmaker who's still alive. He's 83. We really want to honour him before he passes on. Sorry, Ivan, I don't want to jinx that. And he made educational films, but he also made, you know, quite a few other things through the years, starting in about 1970. So there's Ivan Gahl. We've got... we still want to get the Sydney filmmakers down, Karen Perlman and Richard Allen. I've forgotten his name now.
I know who you mean, yeah.
Karen Perlman, you know, made this kind of great musical film. What was it? I Just Want to Make a Film. I've forgotten the title now, sorry. Apart from that, we've still got Queensland by John Ruane coming up. That's like a restored high-def version. And that's the film that he made as a 23-year-old in 1975. But there's a few things like that pretty much, you know, in the works, and hopefully we'll lock in those in the next 3 months, yeah.
Great stuff, Bill. What I might do is I might leave you and I'll continue talking with Misha and Siobhan. Don't want to hold you up too much longer, but thank you for all that. That's very interesting. And, of course, we'll talk again for the next event.
Not a problem. Yeah, thanks, Peter, for your support as always. So, and see you soon, Misha and Siobhan.
Yeah, see you Tuesday
thanks,
week.
Bill. See you soon.
Yeah, cool.
Thanks a lot, Bill. All the best.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Okay, so now one question was lingering for me, and a few more things. You mentioned Misha, Mike Lee is an influence on you.
Mm.
Are there any particular filmmakers, Siobhan, that are influences on you?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the same as Misha in that regard. Mm-hmm. But for me in particular, I'm a big Jim Jarmusch fan, and also Kelly Reichardt. They're my two sort of contemporary kind of go-tos, I guess, of the people I love the most and the kind of the moods that, you know, strike me as being the ones that, you know, I'm slightly addicted to them both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
They'd be mine.
I agree with those, yeah.
Mish is allowing me to have them.
Oh, nice of you.
I allow him to have Mike Lee and Haneke. In fact, I think as a foursome, that's a really great kind of, you know, combination of hardcore and fantasy and flighty and fairy tale-y and sort of true. There's something about all of those things that I think we both really love. So
that's true.
And a quietness.
Yeah.
But also a loudness. It makes no sense, but... No,
I know what you mean, that yin and yang sort of thing.
Bit spacious sometimes.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So, look, the Australian film industry still struggles to support Australian filmmakers, and that I find reprehensible. Hopefully the new government will do something, but who knows, budgetary issues and so on. But... would you have preferred to have seen, I suppose I'm answering my own question, that more support is offered to Australian filmmakers, especially filmmakers of short films, which tend to get lost in the shuffle to a great extent?
Oh, that's not welcome support for any art making, I guess. The thing that I think is lacking for Australian, emerging filmmakers especially, is being able to be supported to make fast, cheap films, actually, so that they can get their legs up and running. Instead of putting a whole lot of pressure on you early, it's just that opportunity to make often and make well and badly, and for it not to be the end of the world if you're making badly on one occasion and well on another. So just giving that opportunity, which I think is really lacking. It's either there's very rarely a lot and very pretty much never. Not very much. So that opportunity to play, actually, is the thing that I think would just be wonderful to see funded. So that you're making smaller things more often, so that you could, like I say, get your legs up and running and have a crack. So that's the bit that I think is really missing. I mean, there's missing generally overall in many areas, but that I'd really love to see. Because I think we lose a lot of people very early because they don't get an opportunity to make more than once if they get an opportunity to make that once at all.
I think that's the key. I think it's having more than one chance, and I feel like sometimes with the way the industry is, sometimes people, it's almost like they become too invested in their one chance to make this great film, and there's a lot of money and support behind it, but there's a feeling that it has to be the one. And I see so many films where I think, I want to see what they make next, and then after that and see where they go.
Yeah.
And you kind of follow up a director and you think, where have they gone? They've kind of disappeared a little bit.
Yeah.
And that encouragement, that sort of the size of funding that means you can still take risks and you can still fall over, and it's not the end of the world. It's actually a way of kind of really the getting up bit is the exciting bit as a general rule with any art. You know, you kind of trip and then you kind of, that way you crawl back up is often where the great work happens. And that's the bit that you don't see very often, which I think is a shame.
But possibly also just a numbers game. Like, for one Australia film, which must have been a massive budget of millions and millions, you could probably make 200 low-budget features. Mm-hmm. And maybe even two or three of those will be as good, if not better, than the big-budget film just by pure chance of being, thrown together by... And the right things coming together at the right time.
Yeah, just stardust falling in the right place at the right time. You just never know.
Which some films are a bit like that.
No, I absolutely agree. And the other issue, of course, is exhibition. And I mean, apart from Bill, who does a great job in screening these films, there isn't an appetite for exhibitors to show many of these films. Maybe a dedicated streaming platform or maybe something else could be a way around this. It's having the film seen that's so important.
Yeah, I think one of the lovely things too about what Bill and Chris do too is really acknowledging that there's something important about small communities getting together and having cinema conversations.
Mm.
And they just do that really, really well. And it doesn't have to be 5,000 people seeing your film. Sometimes it can be 50 people, and that can be one of the best experiences you have as a filmmaker. And it's the thing that can be incredibly informative. And it also means that the conversations can be really specific and about who you are, where you are, and where those other people you're having that conversation with are at as well. So it's, you're not trying to please all people in all ways. You can be specific and particular, and it's not always about the commerce driving it. It can actually be, what is that conversation that you want to have, and this is the form I want to have it in. And I don't necessarily want to please. I want to, you know, actually engage in a really robust conversation. And it's sometimes on that smaller scale where that can happen. And that's the bit I think we often miss. I mean, I think we probably miss it in a worldwide kind of cinematic sense, but particularly here, which I think is a real shame.
Yes. Absolutely agree. I know in Germany they do excellent curated screenings of various films, short films, as well as independent films.
Anyway, an opportunity to make bad films. I love a good bad film, and I would like more opportunity to make them. I'm happy to put that out there publicly.
And that's how you develop and develop your skills, is to keep making films. Not everything's going to be 100% perfection, and so what?
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah, and it's also how you discover the kind of films that are pushing some boundaries or changing the language a little bit.
So apart from your own films, have you seen anything lately that has impressed you?
I can't believe I'm this late to the party, but I just watched, I haven't even watched all of them, but I just watched the, I'm going to get the names of them wrong, you know, Before Sunset, After, the Richard Linklater films. I've literally just watched them. Well, I watched the first two, and I've got the third one. I think I'll watch it when I go home tonight. So this is like 20 years in the making. It took me to get here, but here I am.
Great films, though.
And every one of my students is going, of course you've seen them, and I kind of just make kind of vague noises, and then I think I've actually really got to watch them. Anyway, I have. That was a delight.
Absolute delight, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've just been traumatised by TikTok. Because I was commissioned to make some TikTok videos, so I had to be a part of it, but at least I was getting paid. And on the platform I was just like, what is this? It doesn't make any sense, and I'm going mad. And I got off there as quickly as I could, but I did experience enough to think that we're all going to the next generation is going to go completely mad with TikTok.
I've given TikTok a bit of a wide berth, but I think it sort of throws itself in front of me without me even knowing it more often than I realise.
Well, what we were saying before about having spaces for this kind of traditional filmmaking, I guess you could call it, is important if we want to have a space where films can be in that style, maybe a bit slower or a bit more thoughtful. Because you could argue that there's a space on somewhere like YouTube for these up-and-coming filmmakers to be, but it really does, those kind of platforms do dictate a certain type of filmmaking.
Mm.
And so it's nice to have a space where we can explore something different.
And that exploring something different has made me remember that I saw Memoria not long ago, the Apichpongwara Siddical film, and that absolutely blew my mind. I thought it was glorious, and I haven't stopped thinking about it. I sometimes wake up and I realise I've been thinking about it in my sleep, which is a really nice feeling. So thank you, Apichpongwara Siddical.
It is a great film. It's
glorious.
Whereas I don't wake up thinking about TikTok. I just wake up in a bit of a, like, fever dream.
How coincidental. Memoria is actually on World Movies this week.
Ah, well, if you haven't seen it, anyone who's anywhere near World Movies, watch. It's fabulous. I thought it was fabulous.
Yeah.
And hypnotic. Don't let go. Just hang in there. Even if you fall asleep, and then you'll wake up and you'll be okay.
Mm.
It's one of those films. You can drift in and out of their films, and that's what I love about them, I think.
Yes, absolutely. So apart from TikTok, have you seen anything else? Any film in particular or...
Ah, geez.
Anywhere?
Drive My Car was terrific.
Ah, yes. I saw that. I did love that.
I loved it. There was a few scenes in that which I just thought,
Yeah.
I kept thinking it was about to finish and then it kept going. I'm going, thank goodness for that.
When their opening title sequence was like, was about half an hour into the film.
I know, it's fantastic. So it's like seven or eight films.
Yeah.
You know, but they all sit together gloriously. I thought it was really terrific.
Yeah, I loved it.
Mm.
Absolutely. And it's interesting how people rail against long films. Surely you can make them shorter, for goodness sake.
Yeah. No, stretch them out, I reckon. Stretch them.
Yeah, it's just the comic book movies. They need to be shorter.
Yes. Mm. Although Taika Waititi has a clever way of making you enjoy them.
Mm. He has a corner on that.
That's true.
Cute version. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think we should make a superhero movie, Mish.
Yeah, well, we could make a
slow one.
We could make a Zine movie.
Get some independent Zine and make it out of that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
We're formulating ideas here, folks.
Ring in with suggestions.
Yeah, yeah. If you got your homemade Zine, send it in.
Is it Zine or Zine?
Zine.
Zine.
Oh, I'm probably saying it wrong.
That's typical of us.
I always say things wrong.
Screw that up every time.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Whatever's meaningful to you, that's all right. All right, we've had a nice chat about all of these films and especially about the short films that Misha Bakker and Siobhan Jackson will be screening on July 26th at 8:30 at Thornbury Picture House under Unknown Pleasures auspices and Bill Masoulas and Chris Luscri. It's been a pleasure talking to you both. Thank you so much for coming in having in-depth discussion about your films.
Thank you.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having us. It's really lovely.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Hopefully we'll see people there. Hottest ticket in town.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And come and chat if you come along. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think Thornbury Picture House holds 57 people.
Yeah, something in that realm. Yeah, it's small and intimate and lovely, so it means you can actually have a proper chat afterwards. So. Mm. Come for a drink, a glass and a watch.
And a choc top.
Yeah.
And I think the website to book a ticket is thornburypicturehouse.com.au. Yeah, yeah. So definitely go along and see these fine short films. They certainly are quite different, unusual, challenging. Definitely worth seeing.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Misha, and thanks, Siobhan.